The rich man didn't hate Lazarus. The rich man didn't really, I'm not sure, had any kind of feelings about this Lazarus. The problem is that Lazarus, in terms of coming to the gate of the rich man, is that the rich man was just oblivious to Lazarus. The rich man just wasn't aware of Lazarus. If you read that parable very closely, it's, you know, it's not that they meet, it's just oblivious, totally oblivious. And that to me is the message of this. And notice in this parable that Jesus tells that we know the name of the poor man. There's no name given to the rich man. You know, in our culture, it's just the other way around. We know the names of the rich folks, but you know, we don't know the names of the poor. They're on the periphery. Perhaps they're at the gate, as this parable is saying. So there's a lot of messages in that story this morning. And so as I engage with that parable and think of where are my gates, you know, where are the places in our lives where there are people at the gate that we're oblivious to and not really conscious of in our lives. I think that's one of the messages of this parable. And how can we be called as individuals or even as organizations and systems to be more aware of the gate, wherever that gate may be. Ultimately, you hope there are no gates, you know, but it happens in our lives. I was talking to some folks recently, and a few weeks ago, our Roman Catholic brothers and sisters canonized a saint. If you hear that phrase, they canonized a saint. Mother Teresa was named as Saint Teresa. It's a very long, sophisticated, complicated process the Roman Catholic Church goes through. We Episcopalians have a much simpler system. We just go, that's a saint. If there was a saint, that's a saint. You know, we point to somebody. It's a different, but whatever process you go through to see the saints of our lives, we know who they are. And one of the things I think that, in chatting with some folks a couple weeks ago, one of the things about Mother Teresa was that she was able in her life, her great gift, I think, was to be present to the person right in front of her. She's able to be with that person. And in her life, you know, she left where she lived and went to Calcutta, one of the poorest of the poor, in terms of places to be. And there were people dying in the streets, people in the gutters, people just lying there dying, no medical care, no care at all. And Mother Teresa's vocation, she felt, was to not let someone die alone. Not let someone die feeling they're not loved or cared for. That was her vocation. Now, some criticized her for not trying to change the system that created this situation. But Mother Teresa would respond, well, that's someone else's vocation. You know, my vocation was to do this. And there's lots of conversation about that. But it just struck me as there's an example, and many folks in your life who are able to really be present to what's in front of them and make it a point to go to a place where they can be present. Perhaps in her life, these were not people she would have met in her life. Perhaps these were people at her gate, and she went beyond to meet these folks. Mother Teresa is oftentimes portrayed in a rather humble stance. If you ever see her kind of head down, very humble and feeble. But I know from experience and folks I know that she wasn't she had a quiet strength about her. Back when I was in seminary and first ordained, Mother Teresa was in New York trying to begin a community of folks to help the poor, particularly in the South Bronx. And, you know, the South Bronx was just, at that time, in the late 70s, early 1980s, just a devastated area. It looked like a war zone. Rat-infested, buildings collapsed, smoldering, and just an incredible area. Many of the students that I taught in high school back then were from that community, were from that area, and met with them every day to hear the stories and the struggles that they had. But Mother Teresa wanted to go into that community and just be a presence and invite a group of religious sisters to just be present to that situation and see where the ministry would evolve. So she met with Cardinal Cook, who was Archbishop of New York at that point, who ordained me a priest, actually. And she, story goes, she came to meet with Cardinal Cook, and Cardinal Cook was in his office, and it was kind of like a cardinal's office. You can imagine a very nice office. And Mother Teresa came in, and Cardinal Cook said, "Mother, please come on in. Be seated, be seated." And she proceeded to just cross her legs and sit in the lotus position and sit on the carpet in the middle of his office. And the great story is that Cardinal Cook then sat on the floor with her. And together they discussed what they were trying to do. And one of the things that was done that day is they took a drive to a building in the South Bronx that was just devastated, not being used by anybody. And the intention was for Cardinal Cook and the leadership of the diocese to offer that building to Mother Teresa and her ministry. And they drove up to the South Bronx. They get out of the car, and they looked at this devastated building. And Cardinal Cook said, "It's a building that's not being used, and we'd like to offer it to you for your ministry." And Mother Teresa said, "Okay, but I have another building I'd like to take a look at." And she had heard about this. They got back in the car, and they drove up to, if you know New York City, they drove up to Westchester County, where some of the most affluent communities are located. And they drove up to in front of a church, which is one of the most affluent parishes in the archdiocese. And they get out of the car, and Mother Teresa had heard about this building that was partially being used, but there was some empty space in it. And she said to Cardinal, "How about this building?" And it was like kind of this, oh. Didn't have that in mind. But she got that building. And her reason was to bring people together, to bring folks in the devastation of the South Bronx and the folks who were not in that kind of a situation to begin to form and build relationships. And that did happen. That did happen. I just share that as an example of ways that, you know, folks can make a difference just by being present to one another. That, to me, is the message of that parable today. Jesus is challenging us to be present to each other. And, you know, as we've walked through this past week of all that's happened in Charlotte, and all that's happened in the weeks and the months previous that have happened all over our country, there is just this shadow, this kind of darkness that just hangs over us as we try to figure out how we go forward and what is happening. And I'm sure you are, I am, all of us. How do we go forward? And, you know, just in engaging with our reading today, I hear this thing. How can we just be present to each other? Where are our gates? Where are those places that we have folks we know and are comfortable with, but who are the folks beyond those gates that we just don't engage with? Perhaps it's not even purposeful. It's just our life just doesn't take us there. And so how do we get there to know folks in our lives? We have a sign outside that says, "All are welcome." And this year, we're as we celebrate the life of our parish, one of the things we're saying is, you know, I am welcome, you are welcome, all are welcome. We're called to live into that reality. Live into that reality in our lives, in our systems, in our organizations, in our life together. May we be a people who are just opening ourselves to those at the gates and be present and realize new life, new possibilities, new vitality, and a new world that we can create together. So I invite you to read that parable again if you get a chance today and really hear what Jesus, I think, is inviting us to consider and reflect on our gates and where we need to open those gates together.